It's Ask the Governor, in depth with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, it's Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Good morning. It's nice to have you with us for the January edition of Ask the Governor on WTOP. A little cold air not stopping Virginia Governor Ralph Northam from joining us from Richmond this morning. He's here to take your phone calls. Let me tell you how you can get in with a question. 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. That's to call into the show. We'll be here till 11 o'clock taking phone calls. You can submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThem, or you can email your question to ask@WTOP.com, and you can follow along on Facebook and watch the show this morning via Facebook Live. Good morning, Governor. Nice
good
to have
morning,
you back.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. It's good to be here, and it's a little chilly outside, and indeed a good day to be indoors, so thanks for having me.
I want to also mention we have NBC4's Julie Carey with us in the studio as well. Hi, Julie.
Good, good morning.
Now, let's jump into the news you were making yesterday about transportation in our region. Some important information for commuters to know about. A major deal announcing designed to break gridlock and several major choke points in the area. Virginia will be extending the toll express lanes on the Beltway the rest of the way to the American Legion Bridge at the Maryland line.
Yes.
And you'll add another lane along southbound 95 in Prince William County to bring some relief to a regular bottleneck over the Occoquan River, part of a package deal with Transurban, the company that runs the toll lanes. Let's start with that stretch of the Beltway. Discuss the significance of getting this deal done and extending those express lanes to the Legion Bridge.
Well, you know, Mark, obviously, you know, for our economy to be strong in Virginia, we need good transportation and infrastructure, and we have challenges certainly in Northern Virginia. And our goal all along has been to move people and to move goods as effectively and as efficiently as we can. And so, you know, we have been negotiating with Transurban, and we announced these four projects that you just reviewed yesterday. But, you know, one of the bottlenecks that I hear from a lot of our listeners or constituents is there at Occoquan.
Mm-hmm.
And to have an extra lane there to really, you know, alleviate some of that bottleneck is very important. And so we talked with Transurban. Not to get into the weeds, but we had discussions whether this was a compensation issue. They thought it was. We didn't think it was. And basically, at the end of the day, we decided this is not something that we want to argue or discuss for the next 69 years. So we came to resolution, and I think this will be really good for Virginia and good for that Occoquan area.
Now, you mentioned getting into the weeds a little bit. These discussions have been going on for some time. Why was this so difficult?
Well, because again, Transurban thought that this qualified as a compensation event. We didn't.
So, adding a lane to the main lanes would, what in their view, potentially take away from toll money,
from their revenue. Mm-hmm. Exactly, and we didn't want this to end up in the courts. We didn't want it to be litigated. And again, we've had a good relationship with Transurban, and it wasn't just this, but it was part of a package. And obviously, opening up the lanes to the American Legion is a big deal, about 2.5 miles, to expanding the hot lanes to Fredericksburg. So the things that you mentioned. So
we have a lot of questions about how much this may alleviate traffic, and of course, when folks will ultimately see this.
Yes.
Not going to happen immediately, but you can give us all those details following traffic and weather. Stay with us.
We are back with Ask the Governor, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam joining us live for Ask the Governor until 11 o'clock this morning. Again, 877-336-1035 is the number to call if you'd like to ask a question.
NBC4's Julie Carey is with us in the studio this morning as well, and we are talking about the highway deal announced by the governor yesterday. It is adding express lanes on the Beltway to the American Legion Bridge and adding an extra lane along I-95 in Virginia, southbound in Prince William County to try to ease that gridlock at Occoquan. When can folks see basically shovels in the ground, and when is this anticipated to be completed?
Well, I hope soon, Mark. I don't know the exact date, but there's revenue that we have because of this the agreement that we made with Transurban, about $95 million in that ballpark, and certainly that can be used for this, what we call this auxiliary lane at Occoquan. And I think everybody, all your listeners, know that that's a tremendous bottleneck, and so we're going to do it as quickly as we can and really try to open things up in that area.
Governor, I want to ask you a question that came up when you announced this in Richmond yesterday in regards to that last 2.5 miles on the Capitol Beltway of express lanes. You know, in many ways, it just moves that bottleneck that folks hit on the Legion Bridge. And your transportation secretary said yesterday one of the first calls she was going to make was to Maryland's transportation secretary. What are you saying to Maryland about what needs to happen on their end about the bridge? And do you hope that this puts a little more pressure on them?
You know, I hope it does, Julie. And, you know, obviously the way the laws are, Maryland owns the American Legion Bridge. But I have a good working relationship with Governor Hogan. I think he realizes it. His Secretary of Transportation realizes it. You know, this is a bottleneck that we need to open this up. So we're obviously, you know, more than willing to sit down, and we feel like we're doing our share on the Virginia side, and we'll hopefully work with them to maybe remedy the American Legion Bridge. But as you mentioned, you hit the nail on the head. You can bring all the lanes you want to the bridge, but unless you expand the bridge, you still got the same challenges.
Now, are you able to tell folks how much relief that this auxiliary lane on 95 could actually bring? I'm having a difficult time as someone who sits on that stretch of road fairly regularly through all of that gridlock. I'm wondering how much relief is one lane going to bring in that stretch of road?
I'd like to sit here, Mark, and tell you just it's going to relieve everything. But, you know, I don't know the answer to your question, but I think it will really help. And there are some people that obviously the engineers that study this every day that think this will be of major benefit. So I would start there and say, let's, you know, take this direction in the right step and do everything that we can to really unlock that bottleneck.
Now, folks will eventually see these projects underway. Of course, we're already dealing with a number of other improvements, hoping to relieve gridlock in the area. The 395 express lanes there are being switched from the current HOV, and then the toll lanes are being extended on 95 down towards Fredericksburg. Has there been any studies about kind of minimizing the overall pain in the region as we try to come up with solutions to some of these bigger problems?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's all of the above, really. And as I said earlier, to answer in one of your questions, we're really doing everything that we can to move people and to move goods. And whether that be on our highways, whether it be using transit, rail, all of these things are being looked at. But as you know, Mark, there are just a significant amount of individuals that live here in Northern Virginia. Traffic congestion has always been a problem. So anything that we can do to remedy that, we're really trying to move in that direction. And this is over $1 billion with a B of investment, just these four projects that we announced yesterday. So it's a real step in the right direction, we believe.
And there's no additional tax dollars involved with these.
That's correct.
All right, we're going to take a call from Joseph in Fairfax. Joseph, good morning. What's your question for the governor?
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Calling about a related toll project. I'm reading that we're increasing tolls on the Dulles Toll Road to pay for the Silver Line, but in the process we're driving many drivers on the Route 7, and now the state is going to have to spend millions of dollars to widen Route 7. Does that seem like a prudent investment, kind of rob Peter to pay Paul?
Yes, Joseph, thank you for the question, and your point is well taken. And, you know, we'll certainly look at that, because what you're saying is when you increase the tolls, people don't want to take that option. They look at other options, and it just shifts the burden somewhere else. So we don't want that to happen. We want the tolling to be fair, and I will certainly talk to our Secretary of Transportation and bring that issue up and make sure that we do everything that we can to be fair and to not force people to use other options.
Governor, while we're talking about moving people, Metro, as you know, wants to extend its reduced rail service hours for at least another year. Metro is expected to ask the board to extend those reduced service hours past July, when current plans call for restoration of the full late night and weekend service.
Right.
Is it time to resume late night service on Metro?
Well, we have good people, I believe, that are managing Metro. I, you know, certainly going to leave it in their hands. But We want to do everything, again, Debbie, to make sure that we're able to move people as efficiently as and effectively as we can. And certainly if expanding the area, the hours, if we can do that safely and they have the funding to do that, then I suspect that they will move in that direction.
Well, Mayor Bowser and members of the council, as you know, last night let Metro know they are not happy with the idea of continuing to reduce late night and weekend service. What are your concerns? Is this an issue of safety versus getting people to work in the late night hours when they need to be there?
It's all of the above. Again, obviously, we want people to be safe. We also want to be able to move people if they're working during those hours that not daytime hours. They may not have cars. We want to be able for them to get to and fro where they need to go. So,
are you angry though? Dedicated funding has been worked out. The states and DC have put forward what Metro has asked for, and now Metro is saying it's not good enough yet.
Well, I trust the management we have. I mean, obviously we have folks on the board that are representing Virginia. That are representing the people, and I wouldn't say I'm angry, but we certainly want it to be as efficient as we can, and so we'll continue to monitor it.
We're going to take a break for traffic and weather when we come back. Busy season for the governor. Not only is the General Assembly in session, but there's been this little issue of a government shutdown that has affected both states in our region. We'll talk to the governor about the effects of that and what he's thinking about the possibility that we could go through all of this again in just a matter of weeks if there's not a new deal reached. That's coming up after traffic and weather. It's 10:18. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is with us until 11 o'clock this morning. We'll be taking more of your calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can tweet your question with the hashtag AskThem. Email us at ask@WTOP.com with your question. And you can join us on Facebook and watch the program on Facebook Live this morning. Governor, the longest partial government shutdown in history is finally a thing of the past, at least for the time being, after 35 days. Congress today begins a new round of talks with the clock ticking toward the possibility of another partial shutdown, as you know, potentially in a couple of weeks. And the president is still holding out the possibility of declaring a national emergency to fund his border wall if negotiations don't go his way. With tens of thousands of federal workers and contractors directly affected in Virginia by the shutdown, talk to us a little bit about the financial implications of what the last 35 days have meant for Virginia in terms of lost revenue and, of course, the impact on workers in the state.
It had a significant impact on Virginia, and I'm asked that a lot, Mark. And just to start off with, we have about 130,000 federal employees that live in Virginia. 64,000 of them were going without paychecks for 35 days. And as far as the financial impact, millions of dollars per week just in tax revenue that wasn't coming into the Commonwealth of Virginia. And so, as you know, I wrote several letters to the Secretary of Labor. I wrote letters to President Trump. I just think it's unfortunate that these individuals, our federal employees who are great workers, were used as pawns because of a disagreement in Washington. And I am pleased that the government has been reopened, and I hope that this never happens again. But I will tell you, it's not only these employees, but contractors and subcontractors. For example, the food service of the Smithsonian. People don't think about these things, but thousands of dollars are lost each day, and they'll never be recovered from our contractors. So hopefully we can get our federal employees reimbursed, but a significant impact on Virginia. And again, no excuse for no good reason.
Was there a particular area that felt the sting most acutely? And I guess the question is, what happens now in case we're in the same place 3 weeks from now?
I think what people need to realize, Debbie, is that, they're talking about border security. And I get it. And I think most Americans agree that we need to have good border security. But these were TSA agents. These were members of our Coast Guard that protect our ports of entry. If you want to talk about security, that's where a lot of bad things happen. And to have these people either furloughed or not getting paid, again, it was a significant impact on Virginia, and I believe a significant impact on security of Virginia.
Governor, during the shutdown, there was such a spontaneous outpouring to help these furloughed workers,
yes,
from the community, food pantries, school districts looking for substitutes. But it was very ad hoc. If this happens again, should there be a more structured, formalized response led by the state?
That's a good point. And, you know, I think it was an example, Julie, of what we are as Americans. We help people when folks are in need. And yes, there were food banks. And I talked to parents of some of these federal employees that were helping them make their rent, their house payments, et cetera. But we're talking about that. The question, I think, to the states is, how much of a financial burden, you know, can we take? Obviously, we want to help these individuals. A lot of them were filing for unemployment, and we did what we could to help them. But I would just, you know, want to reinforce to Congress and to our president that do not use, you know, fellow Americans as pawns when you have disagreements. I mean, we suffered this. We experienced it for 35 days. And I would just hope that they don't go back there. I've heard that our president said, well, there's, you know, less than a 50-50 chance that that we, you know, won't come up with a compromise, that we'll have to have another government shutdown. But we as Americans shouldn't tolerate that. And I hope we don't have to experience it again.
Virginia Senator Mark Warner, as you know, has introduced a bill that he's calling the Stop Stupidity Act, which would keep the government,
yes,
running. If there's a lapse in funding, it would automatically renew government funding at the same levels. Do you support this measure? And do you know if the state's full congressional delegation is behind it? And if not, are you trying to pull them along?
Well, I do support it. And again, to take away these people's salaries. One thing that I will tell you, Mark, and I listen to a lot of people around Virginia, and I have lived it myself. Most people out there live paycheck to paycheck. That is the reality. And so when you tell someone to keep working, but by the way, you're not going to get paid in 2 weeks and you might not get paid in a month, that is wrong. And we can't do that again. Another thing that I would say, one of the you know, issues that I have tried to put a lot of emphasis on in Virginia is our reserve fund to maintain our AAA bond rating to prepare for that rainy day. And so we want to be in a position in Virginia, God forbid, if it happens again in Washington, to be able to take care of these individuals. And that's, again, the importance of having some in a significant amount of funding in our reserve funds.
Any negotiations between you and Governor Hogan and Mayor Bowser, for example, is there anything that can be done at the state and local level to put more pressure?
Well, you know, I think the people need to put the pressure on, and I think that's what they felt after 35 days, and that's why the government was reopened. But as far as correspondence with the governor and the mayor, as you know, we were looking at allowing our federal employees to ride Metro. Debbie, you were asking about Metro just a little bit. And we were in negotiations on that Friday. There was an emergency meeting that was going to be convened that afternoon, and then they went ahead and opened up the government again, so we didn't have to deal with that. But we were making plans, in answer to your question, Julie, of how to deal with this and how to at least decrease the burden that these employees were feeling.
Is it? I mean, it really is outrageous. I mean, if you just look at it from the human toll standpoint, when you have people making decisions in this region about whether they can have certain health care. News 4 had a story here in the last week or so with a woman who was trying to make the decision about whether she pays her rent,
yes,
or whether she goes for an important chemotherapy treatment.
Yes.
I mean, when people are having to make those kind of decisions, that's just outrageous.
It is. And two, you know, as I said earlier, we've all probably experienced this. We do sometimes live paycheck to paycheck. And what really bothers me as a Virginian and as an American is to see employees who have a good job, that have a good salary, standing in a food line. I mean, we can do better than that in this country. And I say to our Congress and our president, do not let this happen again.
When we come back from traffic and weather, teachers took to the streets last,
yes,
week in Virginia. We're going to talk about that, and some of our listeners will weigh in on that as well. 1028.
We're back on WTOP with the January edition of Ask the Governor. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is with us for another 30 minutes. We'll be taking more of your phone calls. Heading to the phones right now in just a second. Nell, stand by. We're coming to you next. 877-336 1035, the number to call if you'd like to get in, 877-336-1035. Email us your question to ask@WTOP.com or tweet us your question with the hashtag AskThem.
Governor, Virginia teachers, as you know, took to the streets of Richmond this week to demand more state funding for education. There is an estimate that says spending by Virginia is down about 9% since a decade ago, and that teacher pay in Virginia is 34th now, ranking in the nation. Many educators making $9,000 less than the national estimated average. A 3% pay hike kicks in this July. Your proposal would increase that another 2%. It appears the House agrees with getting teachers up to 5%, but is there agreement on how that's paid for?
Well, you know, absolutely, there is agreement, and a couple of things I would say. Our revenues in Virginia are doing very well. October of this year, up about 10% from last year. So we have revenues that we can invest in ongoing salaries, such as the teachers. We have the federal changes that happened with our tax code. I have encouraged all of our legislators that we need to conform to that. We have the internet sales tax that is being acted on by the General Assembly. So, yes, we have revenue. And the point being, and I think you made a great point, is that our teachers are getting paid about $9,000 less than the national average. So if we're going to be able to recruit and retain talented teachers, we have to pay them. I teach at the medical school level. My wife is a K-5 science teacher. We teach because we love what we're doing. We love children. But we also have bills to pay, and our teachers do as well. And so we took the lead on this. I'm glad that the legislature has agreed, and I hope that come July of this year, our teachers will receive their 5% raise. It will be the highest raise that they've had in over 15 years. We've also got other investments, about $260 million in K-12 education, to include counselors, to include money in our literary fund, which pays for new structure and repairs to our schools. So there are a lot of good things in our proposed budget this year, and I hope the legislature follows suit.
Governor, Republicans on the House Appropriations Committee have the same goal of a 5% pay raise for teachers, but they have a different way of doing it. And they say their plan won't saddle Virginians with a tax hike, as they say yours would, and won't require local districts to put up a match. Do you think their plan might be better than yours?
First of all, Julie, we're not proposing to hike anybody's taxes. We are responding to what President Trump did at the federal level. So so that's I don't think accurate to say that we're raising taxes. But I put a plan on the table in August, 6 months ago, that talked about how to deal with conformity, that talked about how to deal with the revenues we have. Just a couple weeks ago, we had a plan from the House that the numbers don't add up for them. It's going to actually cost more than we even have. The Senate, as we sit here this morning, is going over their budget. My door's open. I am willing to sit down and talk about how we move forward. But I would say, you know, we're in session. We are almost a crossover halfway through session, and people haven't even started talking about the budget yet. So I look forward to discussing that, and more than willing to talk about the different options, how we can pay for this. That's the way the legislative process works. But the sooner we do it, the better.
Governor Nell is on the line from Alexandria with a bottom line question on this issue. Nell, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I'm a former teacher in Virginia, and I wonder if you think this is, in fact, going to get passed this year, this session.
I'm sorry, Nell, if what's going to get passed?
The teacher raise, but as part of your budget proposal.
Well, you know, the 3% is already in the code, so that's a done deal. And I was pleased to hear that the House, in their budget, had advocated for the 2%. So, that means that we have to get the Senate to fall in line. But I think they will. And again, this should be a nonpartisan issue now. The education of our children is important. They are our future. And if we're going to provide them with a world-class education, we've got to have talented teachers that are getting paid adequately and certainly commensurate with the national average.
On Twitter, we have a comment from a listener who says, why are you prioritizing tech jobs over teacher pay? How can you justify giving $750 million to Amazon while they contract with ICE and while schools in Virginia are widely underfunded?
You know, I think if one looks at the commitment that we made to Amazon, over 70% of that financial commitment invest in Virginia. It invests in workforce development, workforce training, money for actually 25,000 to 35,000 new degrees at the college level, and also about $50 million in STEM-related investment in our K through 12 education. So I think that, you know, Amazon deal, whether it was Amazon or any other company, the fact that Virginia is investing in its people, in workforce training, in transportation and infrastructure, in affordable housing, it's a win-win for Virginia.
We all saw those teachers on strike in Los Angeles. A couple of weeks ago. Are you worried at all that teachers will hit a point of frustration in Virginia and walk off the job at some point?
Well, there's no question that there's frustration, and to see the thousands that showed up in the Capitol, I mean, we were out there with them, both my wife and I and some of our staff. I have a very good working relationship with our teachers, with the administrations, with our superintendents, and I'm a good listener. So we're going to do everything that we can to keep our teachers content. But at the end of the day, we want to be able to recruit and retain talented teachers, and that's my goal.
Recruitment is an important issue. The VEA, Virginia Education Association, says enrollment in teacher prep programs is down 40% in the last decade. When folks see the salary numbers and certainly some of the other struggles that teachers have in the classroom these days with resources, how do you reverse that trend and get more people to commit to the profession knowing that they're not going to make a lot of money?
Yes, one of the things that we do, Mark, is get into our schools, talk to our children about the exciting career opportunities, one of which is being a teacher. I'm going to make a quick point to you. It wasn't that long ago we were talking about, you know, these high-tech jobs that you didn't necessarily need a four-year college education for, starting salaries of $88,000 a year. And some teachers were in the audience when we made that announcement. It's like, well, this all sounds good, but what about the people that educate these individuals? You know, why are we making $45,000, $50,000 a year? Well, they have a valid point there. And so if we're going to have the most talented teachers, we've got to be able to pay them. And again, that's certainly something that's a priority of mine.
There are many other issues before the General Assembly this session, and quite a few of them we have on the list of things to discuss with the governor in the remaining 20 minutes of the show. We'll be back with more of that on Ask the Governor on WTOP.
Back with Ask the Governor, our last 20 minutes of the show here on WTOP with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. 877-336-1035. The lines are lit up, so we ask you to be patient. We're going to go right to the phones now with Lloyd, who's calling in from Herndon, Virginia. Hi, Lloyd. What's your question for the governor?
Good morning. So it actually ties back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago with traffic and tolls and things like that. So I don't know, does the governor want to take another question on that subject?
Sure, he does. Right, governor?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Lloyd.
Thank you. So I am a government contractor. I work for an agency in Washington, D.C. I live in Northern Virginia, and I drive 66 every day. I need to take my car to work for a variety of reasons. I need to be physically on site. Today is an exception because of the weather. But the biggest problem I'm having, I work in cybersecurity. We need highly qualified individuals, and we are having a heck of a time recruiting people to work downtown who live in Virginia. Mm-hmm. It's easy if they live in D.C. or Maryland because they don't have to deal with the tolls. I don't know, did you or did anyone else really sit down and evaluate that sort of secondary cost in that we are not able to fill jobs with people who live in Virginia as a result of this? And I'm talking large numbers of very high-paying jobs. The tax revenue that these people would be paying back to Virginia would be pretty substantial.
Good question, Governor.
It is a great question, Lloyd, and I'm sure that was taken into account. But again, and I know 66 has been a bone of contention. We are really trying to, one, make it so it's affordable, but two, to be able to move people as efficiently as we can. And as you may know, Lloyd, about 66% of the individuals that travel on 66 now are doing it with carpooling or transit. So anyway, I would, again, for those individuals that want to work in Washington, there are options at least. And I know if someone wants to drive individually in their car, it's going to be more expensive. But I would encourage people to look at the different options and remind them that about 66% of individuals that travel into D.C. now are doing it through carpooling and or transit. So hopefully we're heading in the right direction. But your point is well taken. We want people to live in Virginia. There's no question about that. And if they're working in Washington, we certainly want to make that as efficient as we can.
Let's turn back to NBC4's Julie Carey.
And, Governor, as you know, the issue of abortion rights emerges every year in the General Assembly session. This year, no exception. There was a very contentious committee hearing yesterday when Fairfax County Delegate Kathy Tran made her case for lifting restrictions on third trimester abortions, as well as other restrictions now in place. And she was pressed by a Republican delegate about whether her bill would permit an abortion, even as a woman is essentially dilating, ready to give birth. And she answered that it would permit an abortion at that stage of labor. Do you support her measure and explain her answer?
Yeah, and I wasn't there, Julie, and I certainly can't speak for Delegate Tran, but I will tell you, first thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
And do you think multiple physicians should have to weigh in, as is currently required? She's trying to lift that requirement.
Well, I think it's always good to get a second opinion and for at least two providers to be involved in that decision, because these decisions shouldn't be taken lightly. And, mm-hmm. and so, I would certainly support more than one provider.
All right. Let's go back to the phones now for the governor. We're going to talk now with Mike, who's calling in from Fairfax. Hi, Mike. What's your question?
Hi there, and thank you. Governor Northam, I first want to say thank you. You promised to come in and be bipartisan, as well as to work with all people to keep Virginians safe. I'm very concerned about your vetoing of guns in churches or mosques or synagogues, places of worship. These are, of course, targeted by psychopaths such as the individual in South Carolina and Texas. Why did you do such a thing? I'm just curious, because a lot of people carry guns in church anyway. And it's just a tool.
Well, I guess we have a difference of opinion, Mike. And I'm a member of a Baptist church, and I would just as soon go to my place of worship, as I think a lot of Virginians would, and not look beside me and see firearms. I just don't think they're needed in churches. Obviously, we want people to be safe in their place of worship. I think there are other ways to address that. But this whole proliferation of guns, Mike, is not the direction that I would want to see Virginia go in. I would just remind you and all the other listeners, we lost 1,028 Virginians this past year to gun-related accidents. That's about three per day. In contrast, we lost 950 Virginians to traffic fatalities. We're more than willing, Mike, to have a discussion on how to make our highways safer, put stronger laws on the books, move over laws, which I'm all in favor of. But let's have a discussion on how we can make our societies, our communities, our churches safer in regards to guns. And I don't believe personally that we need firearms in our places of worship.
A lot of the gun measures that you supported have gone down in committee in the General Assembly. What's your response to that, and can any of those measures be revived at this point?
Well, I don't know that they'll be revived this year, Debbie, but, I listened to people across Virginia, 1,028 gun-related deaths, 600 of them, by the way, suicides, toddlers who pick up loaded firearms on the bedside table, women who are the tragic victims of domestic violence. We as a society, I believe, need to have a dialogue. That's what I asked for. I introduced 7 pieces of legislation, and to your point, they were all defeated. But we have an election coming up in November of this year, and I would hope that some like-minded people come into Richmond and represent Virginia and really are willing to sit down at the table and have a dialogue on how we can make our community safer, how we can promote common sense gun legislation.
Final minutes with Governor Northam coming up, and we have some questions about sports betting and casinos in Virginia for the governor after traffic and weather. The final minutes of Ask the Governor on WTOP, and more of your phone calls and questions coming. The number again, or as a reminder, 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. You can email us at ask@WTOP.com and tweet your question using the hashtag Ask them.
Governor, there are bills moving through the General Assembly that would allow more gambling in the Commonwealth. A recently passed Senate committee bill would allow developers to build casinos in Bristol, Danville, Portsmouth, if residents approve of it. Mm-hmm. The legislation would also allow an Indian tribe to build casinos in Richmond and Norfolk with local approval. You say you want more study on these gambling proposals. Why put the brakes on gambling revenues at this point?
Well, Debbie, there is a lot of activity in Richmond during this session, and I would say it's probably a hot topic now, and whether it be sports betting, whether it be casinos, like as you said, in Bristol, Danville, Portsmouth, Norfolk, we really need to, I think, look at this responsibly. And I think the point that I would make, and I've always been open-minded to this, but a lot of resources in Virginia, people obviously enjoy doing this, and it's going to other states. So how can or should we keep those resources and revenues in Virginia? But I will tell you that there are a lot of questions, and these have, I think, come to the front during these discussions during this legislative session about regulatory oversight. Who should be regulating this? Should it be our lottery? That's a question. The financial arrangements. How much is the state going to receive as far as, taxes from gambling? There's also a social impact, as I'm sure a lot of the people are aware of, and then a lot of unintended consequences. So we saw this coming. We dealt with the Colonial Downs, the horse racing last year. That kind of fell in our laps. And so from the start, we have said that we would favor a study to make sure that if we are going to move forward in Virginia, that we do it in a responsible manner. And so that's what I have supported.
So what's the timing of the study? Because, folks are saying, well, tick-tock, the potential loss of revenue that could go to the neighboring jurisdictions while you guys are studying. What are you talking about here?
Yeah, in the upcoming months. And, I think easily we could be ready to have responsible legislation in the 2020 session. But we have people in place that, our Secretary of Commerce obviously is involved, our Secretary of Finance. We have people that are working on this, and we did a lot of work because of Colonial Downs last year. So we're up and ready to go. It's just I need to get the green light from the legislature.
Governor, 6 states and hundreds of localities have raised the tobacco purchasing age to 21, and Virginia is inching closer to doing the same. A bill has cleared the Senate that would push the legal age of tobacco purchase from 18 to 21 for both traditional tobacco products as well as e-cigarettes. Yes. And folks may be surprised that big tobacco is not fighting this. What kind of alternate universe are we in Virginia where we're moving toward making this kind of significant change without a big fight from the tobacco companies?
Well, first of all, we're in the best universe in the Commonwealth of Virginia, so let's make that clear. But here's the issue, and I served on the Foundation for Healthy Youth. We addressed how we can keep that first cigarette or our tobacco product out of a use mouth, as you will. And so I think the tobacco industry, as well as a lot of other people, realize that we have a problem, especially at high school, and there are many seniors that are 18. And 18-year-olds right now can buy tobacco products and then, you know, transfer them over to minors. And so this was the, I think, really the main reason that we spoke with the tobacco industry. They see it as a problem, and to move the legal age from 18 to 21 will help to alleviate that specific problem.
Well, while you have them in the tent, I'm wondering, is there any movement in Virginia to raise the tax on tobacco? Virginia's 49th in the nation on tobacco taxes, source of revenue certainly. I'm looking at the State of Tobacco Control report from the American Lung Association. Virginia received Fs in every category that they rate, from tobacco prevention and cessation, smoke-free air, tobacco taxes. What is it going to take to move the needle a little more in Virginia, particularly on taxes?
Great question, Mark. And I think, you know, traditionally and historically, Virginia is a low-tax state, but I would certainly be more than willing to sit and have a discussion on should we look at taxing tobacco products. Because here's what, as a physician, I will tell you, at the end of the day, you and I and a lot of other people end up paying for the medical care of individuals that are exposed to tobacco products. And so should they have more skin in the game? So I think that's a discussion that we'd all be willing to have.
On social media to this program, no shortage of questions about where are we in Virginia on moving the needle on marijuana, either medical marijuana or recreational marijuana, and the range of issues on cannabis. Do you see any changes happening either now or in the next session?
Well, we've made a lot of progress on the use of medical marijuana, the cannabidiol oil, and as you know, that started to be used for epileptics. It had intractable seizures. Now we can use it for other medical conditions. But to be able to collect better data, to better studies on marijuana products, I think the first step is really to decriminalize it, so to actually change the classification of it, so we could do studies on it and then, you know, have evidence-based medicine that could be used. I have never been a proponent, Mark, for legalizing marijuana. I don't think that Virginia should go in that direction, but certainly to decriminalize it, we're obviously putting people in jail, ruining their lives that have possession of marijuana, and I think that needs to stop. If these individuals are not dangerous to our society, the last place that we want them is in jail, and it's also very expensive. So that's all tied into the criminal justice reform that we've been working on, but I think we'll continue. I know we'll continue to move in the direction of decriminalizing it in Virginia.
Do you think it's close?
We maybe need to change a couple more seats in this election coming up in 2019, and then we'll be there.
All right. That'll be the last word from Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. We thank you so much for coming in.
It's always great to be here, and I would just encourage everybody out there to stay warm.
Thank you, Governor.
We'll see you next month.
See you next month.